must have lasered the antennas. George nodded. So that's what the sodding bastard was doing. He was very thorough. Sitting there, staring at the control panel with half its telltale lights glowering red, George tried to think. We're okay on life support. Once the generator is running again, Nodan corrected. Otherwise the batteries will run out in, he glanced at the displays, 11 hours. Better fix the generator, then. That's our first priority. Nodan started to get up from his seat. He hesitated, asked, and our second priority?
Figuring out if we can nudge ourselves into a trajectory that'll bring us close to Ceres before we starve to death.
Amanda would have preferred to stay in Selene for just a few days more, but Fuchs insisted that they start back for Ceres as soon as possible. He learned from Pancho that an astro ship was due to depart for Ceres the next day, carrying a load of equipment that Helvetia had ordered before the warehouse fire. "We'll go back on that ship," Fuchs told his wife.
"But it's a freighter. It won't have passenger accommodations," Amanda protested.
"We'll go back on that ship," he repeated. Wondering why her husband was so insistent on returning as quickly as possible, Amanda reluctantly packed her travel bag while Fuchs called Pancho to beg a ride. The next morning, they rode the automated little tractor through the tunnel that led out to Armstrong Spaceport and climbed aboard the spindly-legged shuttlecraft that would lift them to the Harper. The ship was in lunar orbit, but rotating at 1/6 G-spin. Fuchs felt grateful that he would not have to endure weightlessness for more than a few minutes of the shuttlecraft's flight.
"Newest ship in the solar system," said her captain as he welcomed them aboard. He was young, trim, good-looking, and stared openly at Amanda's ample figure. Fuchs, standing beside her, grasped his wife's arm possessively. "I'm afraid, though, that she's not built for passenger service," the captain said as he led them down the habitat module's central passageway. "All I can offer you is this cabin." He slid an accordion-pleated door back. The cabin was barely large enough for two people to stand in. "It's kind of small," the captain said apologetically, but he was smiling at Amanda.
"It will do," said Fuchs. "The trip is only 6 days." He stepped into the compartment, leading Amanda. The captain, still out in the passageway, said, "We break orbit in 30 minutes. "Good," said Fuchs, and he slid the door shut. Amanda giggled at him.
"Lars, you were positively rude to him."
With a sardonic grin back at her, he said,
"I thought his face would fall out of his head. He was staring at you so hard."
"Oh, Lars, he wasn't, was he?"
"He most certainly was."
Amanda's expression became sly.
"What do you think he had in mind?"
His grin turned wolfish.
"I'll show you."
Even though they took place in the tropical beauty of La Guaira, on the Caribbean coast of Venezuela, the quarterly meetings of Astro Manufacturing Corporation's board of directors had turned into little less than armed confrontations. Martin Humphreys had built a clique around himself and was working hard to take control of the board. Opposing him was Pancho Lane, who had learned in her 5 years on the board how to bring together a voting bloc of her own. As chairman of the board, Harriet O'Banion tried her best to steer clear of both groups. Her job, as she saw it, was to make Astro as profitable as possible. Much of what Humphreys wanted to do was indeed profitable, even though Pancho opposed virtually anything Humphreys or one of his people proposed. But now Pancho was proposing something that might become an entirely new product line for Astro, and Humphreys seemed dead set against it.
"Scoop gases from the atmosphere of Jupiter?" Humphreys was scoffing. "Can you think of anything, any idea at all, that carries more risk?" "Yeah," Pancho snapped, "letting somebody else get a corner on the fusion fuels market."
Red-haired Hattie O'Banion was no stranger to outbursts of temper, but not while she chaired the board. She rapped on the long conference table with her knuckles. "We will have order here," she said firmly. "Mr. Humphreys has the floor." Pancho slumped back in her chair and nodded unhappily. She was seated almost exactly across the table from Humphreys. O'Banion had to exert some self-control to keep from smiling at her. Pancho had come a long way since her first awkward days on the board. Underneath her West Texas drawl and aw shucks demeanor, she had a sharp intelligence, quick wit, and the ability to focus on an issue with the intensity of a laser beam. With Hattie's help,
Pancho had learned how to dress the part of a board member. Today she wore a trousered business suit of dusky rose, touched off with accents of jewelry. Still, Hattie thought, her lanky, long-legged tomboy image came through. She looked as if she wanted to reach across the table and sock Humphreys between the eyes. For his part, Humphreys seemed perfectly at ease in a casual cardigan suit of deep blue and pale lemon turtleneck shirt. He wears clothes well, Hattie thought, and hides his thoughts even better. Martin, said O'Banion, do you have anything else to add? I certainly do, Humphreys said with a crafty little smile. He turned his gaze to Pancho for a moment, then looked back at O'Banion. I am opposed to fly-by-night schemes that promise a jackpot at the end of the rainbow, but are in reality fraught with technical risks and human dangers. Sending a ship to Jupiter in a crazy attempt to scoop hydrogen and helium isotopes from that planet's atmosphere is utter madness, pure and simple. Half a dozen board members nodded agreement. O'Banion noticed that a couple of them were not usually on Humphreys' side in these quarrels. Miss Lane, do you have anything more to say in support of your proposal? Pancho sat up ramrod straight and looked squarely at Humphreys. I sure do. I've presented the facts, the engineering analysis, the cost estimates, and the profit probabilities. The numbers show that scooping fusion fuels is within the capabilities of existing technology. Nothing new needs to be invented. A ship that dives into Jupiter's atmosphere to collect its gases? Blurted one of the older men down the table. He was paunchy, bald, red-faced. Pancho made a forced smile at him. A ship that's being teleoperated from Jupiter orbit. It's well within existing capabilities. There's no base in the Jupiter system for a remote operating team. We'd have to set it up ourselves. That's true, Pancho said evenly. I didn't say it was existing state-of-the-art hardware, but it is within existing capabilities. We just have to build it and test it. At what cost? Asked the gray-haired woman sitting two chairs down from Pancho. You have all the cost figures in my presentation, Pancho said. Then, turning to O'Banion, she asked, Can I finish my say without being interrupted, please? O'Banion nodded. Raising her voice slightly, she said, Let's give Pancho the same courtesy we gave Martin, everyone. Pancho said, Thanks, y'all. Earth needs energy sources that won't put greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Fusion is the answer, and fusion based on helium-3 is the most efficient fusion system that's been built so far. There's trillions of dollars per year waiting for the company that can supply fusion fuels for Earth. And don't forget that Cellini, the Mars bases, Ceres, and lots of other facilities off Earth will buy fusion fuels, too. Not to mention the market for spacecraft propulsion. Cellini sells us deuterium-3, said the red-faced bald man. They scoop it up out of the ground. Pancho countered, There's not enough deuterium on the moon to satisfy the potential market demand. But going all the way out to Jupiter? That will make the price too damn high, won't it? Not once we get the facilities running. It'll be a long-haul cargo run, a pipeline operation. We won't have to undercut Cellini's price. We'll just offer a million times more fusion fuels than Cellini can dig up. The man mumbled to himself, unconvinced. Pancho looked back at O'Banion, but before the chairwoman could say anything, she went on, One more thing. If we don't do this, Humphrey's space systems will. Humphrey shot up from his chair and pointed an accusing finger at Pancho. That's a deliberate insult. That's the truth and you know it, Pancho fired back. The boardroom erupted with angry voices. O'Banion banged on the table, hard. Quiet, all of you! Do I still have the floor? Pancho asked, once the commotion calmed down. Humphreys was glaring at her from across the table. O'Banion threw an irritated look at Pancho. As long as you refrain from personal attacks on other board members, she answered stiffly. Okay, said Pancho. But it seems to me like we got a problem here. Mr. Humphreys here is in a position to block new ideas and then take them back to his own corporation and run with them. You're accusing me of unethical behavior, Humphreys barked. Damn right, said Pancho. Wait! Quiet! O'Banion demanded. I will not have this meeting break down into a personal quarrel. The oldest member of the board, a frail-looking gentleman who hardly ever said a word, spoke up. It seems to me, he said in a whispery voice, that we do indeed have a conflict of interest here. That That's nonsense, Humphrey snapped.
I'm afraid that the point has to be considered, O'Banion said.